It's the 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman, in for Brian Mackey this week. The issue of carbon capture and storage underground has sparked debate across Illinois, especially around the Mahomet Aquifer, which spans from Iroquois County to Cass County and is the primary source of water for more than 800,000 Illinois residents. Some worry the projects could threaten groundwater quality and safety, but many scientists say those concerns aren't justified. The issue has been taken up by state lawmakers, and a bill that would ban carbon sequestration beneath sole source aquifers passed the General Assembly last month with overwhelming bipartisan support. It now awaits action from Governor Pritzker. We're diving into this issue today, and I'm joined now in studio by Sam Rink, a reporter with IPM's student newsroom who's been following this issue. Sam, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Randy Locke. He's chief scientist with the Illinois State Geological Survey. Randy, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you. It's nice to join.
Later in the show, we'll also be joined by the climate policy director of Prairie Rivers Network, a group that supports restrictions around carbon sequestration. And listeners, we invite you to join this conversation. What do you think about all this? What questions do you have about carbon sequestration? You can give us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Randy, let's start with you. So your team studies Illinois geology extensively. Can you walk us through the actual process of carbon sequestration and maybe tell us, like, where is this carbon dioxide coming from? Why are companies interested in injecting it underground?
Sure. I can start out a little bit and just say that the role, so I work at the Illinois State Geological Survey as a research scientist, and one of our roles is to be able to help Illinois and all of our stakeholders in protection of environmental quality, economic development, public safety. And one of those things that we have done over the last 20 plus years is work with the U.S. Department of Energy and a range of collaborators and being able to evaluate how we can look at ways of mitigating or reducing emissions and mitigate climate change. One of those tools in the toolkit that has been of great interest for quite some time is CCS, or carbon capture and storage. Sometimes you also hear it referred to as CCUS. The U means utilization. But in essence, it is a way of being able to take industrial emissions or emissions from stationary sources, especially power plants, steel generation, or steel manufacturing and cement manufacturing, take those emissions of CO2, and instead of letting it go to the atmosphere, you capture it, transport it, use it for some purpose, although that would be a small amount of that CO2, and then ultimately store it in the deep subsurface permanently so it's not able to interact with the atmosphere and create additional changes in the weather or long-term climate change.
And what role does Illinois play nationally in carbon storage underground currently? And can you talk a little bit about why our geological conditions are seen as favorable for this type of approach to capturing and storing carbon?
Certainly. We've been a national leader in the Midwest, along with a range of different partners and organizations in evaluating CCS as a technology for emissions reduction. The geology in this area, which is commonly referred to as the Illinois Basin, it's an area that covers most of the southern two-thirds of Illinois, but also parts of Indiana and Kentucky. It's a large 60,000 square mile area that has very good geology because of the layers that are from deep in the subsurface that can support storage of materials. Materials that are in the subsurface have a range of characteristics. They might have porosity or permeability. That is that they can store fluids, or they have fluids in between the grains. Fluid can move through those things that are permeable, like sandstones. Fluid doesn't move through those things that are not permeable, like shales or other fine grain materials. That geology is very well suited for long-term storage of CO2 in the deep subsurface.
And Randy, can you clarify us? The concern isn't about the CO2 itself, because we got a text from Tony in Champaign who said, well, people drink pop all the time that has carbon dioxide in it and they're not worried. I'm not sure this is very different. But it's not about the CO2 itself, but it's The concern comes from the chemical reactions that the chemicals that form when carbon dioxide reacts with minerals underground. Is that right?
So there's a range of considerations that have to go into effect before any project is considered. And some of those are a wide-ranging risk assessment of what happens. How do you design the project so that the storage is the storage has integrity, the reservoir is well characterized, you know that there is a cap rock or a layer above your storage unit that will not allow interaction of that CO2 that's stored with other shallower zones. And you're right, it's the question is, if CO2 were to interact with drinking water, what are the effects of that CO2 on water that we would typically drink from private wells? Fortunately, the geology is such that there's a great separation between where we get our drinking water and where the CO2 is stored. And if there is interaction, assessments of those types of interactions show that it takes a while for chemical reactions to occur. Those effects tend to be local or localized around a well, meaning within hundreds to thousands of feet of that well, not broad-scale, multi-county types of interactions that happen quickly.
We're speaking with Randy Locke, Chief Scientist of Research and Development at the Illinois State Geological Survey and the Prairies Research Institute at the University of Illinois. We're also joined by Sam Rink, IPM student newsroom reporter, who's been following this issue closely. Sam, can you take a step back and explain what exactly is an aquifer? And what makes the Mahomet Aquifer in particular so important to the communities to which it supplies water?
So an aquifer is essentially, it's an underground layer of rock or a sediment. Sediment meaning like sand or clay, silt or a gravel or something that can hold water. A lot of people might imagine it as like a big underground lake or river of, you know, free water, but a lot of times that water is stored within a very porous material, a rock or a sediment. And the thing about the Mahomet Aquifer is it's what we would call a sole source aquifer, which is not just a descriptive term, but it's actually an EPA designation. So in 2015, there was kind of a battle to designate the Mahomet Aquifer as sole source, and it was made so in 2015. And basically what a sole source aquifer is it means that it supplies at least 50% of drinking water for its service area, which in central Illinois is roughly 800,000 people. And that if there something were to happen to that aquifer, like a contamination, then there would be no reasonably available alternative drinking water source. So it means that they wouldn't be able to bring in water from outside that could compensate for the natural resource that was already present if something were to happen to it. And I think the Mahomet Aquifer is something that people are very aware of in Champaign. If you grow up here, if you live around here, it's something that you'll probably hear discussed, even if you're not, you know, in these environmental circles where you're constantly discussing those kind of things.
And our water around here, by the way, tastes great.
It does.
When I travel elsewhere, I'm like, oh, I bring as many jugs of Mahomet Aquifer water with me as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I've been drinking tap water here my whole life, and I, you know, People comment about it when they come here from out of state. So people are very aware of where their water comes from in Champaign.
And the people that you've talked to, these are people who have shown up at city council meetings and other things to express their concerns. What's the gist of the concerns that you hear from people who live around here and hear about the potential for carbon sequestration to occur near around here, close to the aquifer?
Yeah. So kind of like we said earlier, a lot of people are concerned about the potential for the chemical reactions that carbon dioxide could cause, because when you introduce carbon dioxide to water, it can drastically affect the pH where that carbon dioxide is introduced, and that can lead to affecting other chemicals and materials that might already be present in the aquifer but perhaps weren't, getting into the water per se before then. And we've also had, you know, there have been other issues with water in this area. In 2014, there was a methane gas leak that didn't necessarily impact the entire aquifer, but there were lots of people whose private wells were impacted by that, and they're still dealing with the effects of that today. So people are just, they're very conscious of the water around here and the natural resources that they rely on, you know, for drinking, for irrigating their crops, and, you know, all of the uses that water plays in our lives.
And we got an overwhelming number of text messages from listeners, including one from Aaron in Springfield, who says, in the case of the Mahomet Aquifer, we can't make a single mistake because of the extraordinary risk to clean drinking water, full stop. However, in areas that are not contained, nowhere near a water supply, and do not have to rely on pipelines, it is a good practice to send CO2 directly into a layer of ground that will hold it to its capacity. Not all sites are alike, and each case should be scrutinized with regulations for human, plant, and animal safety. Randy, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Why are we even talking about carbon sequestration near the Mahomet Aquifer? Aren't there other sites that could be considered that are further away from water sources?
That's a good question. So while our geology within this region is generally quite suitable because of the layers that are there, the porous and permeable materials that are deep underground, it's not all consistent quality. So some areas are better than others. And some of those areas that are better suited happen to occur in and or near or underneath the Mahomet Aquifer. We're conducting studies to look at the suitability, the rock qualities, and a range of other factors. We're studying that on a regional scale, and some of those studies will be out within the next 6 to 12 months. We hope to refine what our understanding is of the suitability. The Mahomet Aquifer is a great resource, and we need to do as much as we can to ensure that it is protected. Some of those things that are in place already are the federal permitting framework that is based on the Safe Drinking Water Act, state level legislation around the Safe CCS Act, and other ways in which projects need to lay their plans out clearly and show that they're being protective of the environment.
So the bill I mentioned that would restrict carbon sequestration near sole source aquifers received bipartisan support broadly. I want to play a couple clips from lawmakers. Here's Republican State Representative Brandon Schweitzer, who represents Illinois' 104th district, which includes parts of Champaign and Vermilion counties.
It's been awesome to see the different groups coming out and wanting, you know, something done to be able to protect our drinking water, and to be able to have a hand in that is, you know, it's a great feeling.
And here's Democratic Representative Carol Ammons of Urbana.
We want to make sure that there is no point and no time in the present moment or any future moment where this water source is risked because of corporate need to store toxic waste.
So, Sam, interesting that, you know, this legislation received broad bipartisan support. Can you talk a little bit about what the legislation includes in just the couple minutes we have left before we need to take a short break?
Yeah. So like I said earlier, I think people are generally very aware of their water in central Illinois because of the Mahomet Aquifer. And, you know, not just, you know, Representative Schweitzer and Ammons that we just heard here, but every elected official that I've spoken to about this, you know, from Champaign County board meetings to some of our state senators who are involved in the Senate bill that is, you know, currently awaiting action by Governor J.B. Pritzker. You know, all of them are very aware of the fact that this is something that their constituents very much care about. And, you know, all these people, they live here as well. So if something were to happen to the water source, it's not just their constituents that are affected, but it is, you know, them and their families and, you know, the farmers that are using the water that are providing food for all of us. I think water protection is generally a very universally understood issue. And I think it's no surprise that it's become an issue with so strong bipartisan support, especially with the amount of community support for this bill from, you know, advocacy groups and, you know, just individuals, concerned individuals, citizens who have, you know, kind of taken it upon themselves to be a part of this issue. And not just with carbon sequestration, but anything that has threatened the Mahomet Aquifer in the past, we've had task forces being made over the years to, you know, prevent various forms of contamination against the aquifer. So, you know, carbon sequestration isn't the first issue that people have kind of taken up when it comes to protecting the Mahomet Aquifer. And it might not be the last either.
Yeah. And we just have about a minute left. But Sam, many who oppose carbon sequestration in Illinois near sole source aquifers, they cite leaks that occurred last year at the Archer Daniels Midland facility in Decatur. Can you remind us briefly what happened there?
Yeah, so last year there were two leaks at the facility, and according to the EPA investigation, there were some equipment malfunctions that caused carbon dioxide and brine to leak, which brine is like a highly saline solution that's not drinkable. And that leaked, and they violated the company's injection permit, which is part of those the way that they assure that it's going to be safe. That's what the permitting process is. But when those leaks occurred, they were so far below ground that they did not impact any drinkable water. So the leaks did happen and they raised a lot of concerns, but ultimately no one was directly affected by that in terms of contamination to their water. So the complete results of those leaks are kind of, they're yet to be seen.
Sam Rink is a reporter with IPM's Student Newsroom. Thank you so much for joining us, Sam.
Thank you.
And Randy, we'll have you stick around. Randy's a scientist with the Illinois State Geological Survey. We're coming up on a short break here, but listeners, if you'd like to join our conversation, we'll be talking about this issue of carbon sequestration and sole source aquifers for another 15 minutes or so. 800-222-9455 is the number to join us, 800-222-9455. I'm Christine Herman. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman. We're talking about carbon sequestration, the practice of capturing and storing carbon dioxide underground. We've been speaking with Randy Locke, chief scientist with the Illinois State Geological Survey and also with the Prairie Research Institute at the University of Illinois. And we're also joined now by Andrew Rain. He's the climate policy director with Prairie Rivers Network. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
The number to join us if you have a question or a comment, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So, Andrew, you've been listening in on all this. From your perspective, what's Prairie Rivers Network's stance on carbon storage projects?
Yeah, on carbon sequestration broadly, I guess the point I would want to make first is that protecting the aquifer isn't about opposing carbon capture and sequestration. Like this movement wasn't to stop these projects because we don't like CCS. The goal was to stop the projects because we think they're a real threat to the aquifer, and one that is happening at a scale that is so much larger than anything that we've done in Illinois before. We're talking about, the proposals were to put 50 times what they've done at that Decatur project that Sam was talking about before the break. So this isn't about opposition to CCS. I would say broadly, as somebody who works on energy and the climate, concerns about carbon sequestration would be, well, first, the Trump administration is gutting the US EPA and the protections that we have related to carbon sequestration are largely due to US EPA administered permitting processes. And if we don't have the engineers, the expertise at the US EPA to evaluate those permits, no matter how good or robust a permitting process is, we can't rely on that. And more broadly, you know, as a climate solution, I think that this money could be better spent on other technologies. I think we need to be building out renewable energy as aggressively as we can. And at some point we will need to solve for things like steel and things like concrete, which will need technology that likely carbon capture to make them carbon free, although there are some alternatives. But ultimately right now, this is a technology that's largely going on fossil fuel power plants. We're keeping the largest coal plant in Illinois alive until 2045. They're proposing to do that using this technology. And a lot of the CO2 we're looking at is from ethanol. And another technology that we think we're going to be moving away from as we move towards electric vehicles. And instead of doubling down on the past, I think we should be investing in the future. But our drinking water is about more than that. So we regardless of the technology, we need to be protecting our drinking water. And that's why we fought to protect the Mojave Aquifer.
And that's interesting. You mentioned ethanol. We got a text from Anne in Peoria. She says, I think the conversation has to start with the reason CO2 is being produced. Ethanol, its production takes more energy than it produces. So let's talk about stopping that. If we don't produce CO2 in the first place, then we don't have the threat of sequestration. Randy, we also got a text from Mike in LaSalle who says it seems like one of the greatest risks for leakage is associated with the wells that penetrate the capping layer, injection, monitoring, and abandoned. Can the guests discuss this concern and how it should be addressed? So I know you mentioned that there's a huge layer of, numerous layers of rocks between where the carbon's injected and stored underground. But can you discuss, maybe respond to Mike's concerns about potential leaks in more detail?
Sure, that's a very good question. And actually, it's one that's considered in a risk assessment for developing project plans. The areas where you would have potential pathways, those are often most likely routes are the ones that are wells that you are either using for injection or using for monitoring. So robust monitoring design then limits the number of penetrations that would go through a cap rock. There are ways in which you can monitor fluid and pressure indirectly, but some of the best measurements to understand the dynamics of a project are direct measurements. But limiting the potential pathways is a good way to reduce the areas that leakage could occur. Please go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to ask if, Andrew mentioned with cutbacks at the federal level for US EPA, do you share concerns? Because I know you mentioned the permit process and there'd be safety assessments, but do you share those concerns about the cutbacks of the oversight and, whether those, whether there's sufficient resources to ensure that the projects that are pursued would be done in a way that would protect, water supply and just the environment more broadly?
So the permitting processes are still in place. They haven't been rescinded. There's actually been discussion of focusing on the process of applications and reviewing those, making sure that there's adequate resources for regulators. I'm aware of at least one national group, the Groundwater Protection Council, that is putting on workshops related to helping to train regulators in permit writing, so they're aware of all the technical concepts. If a federal permitting process were to be affected, we also have the ability within the state to implement underground injection control permitting that could be modeled off of that. Whether or not it's sanctioned through the US EPA or something that would be developed within the state itself, should a federal permitting program be affected or removed, we would have the ability, I believe, to do that at the state level as well if there were concerns.
We're speaking with Randy Locke, Chief Scientist with Illinois State Geological Survey, and also Andrew Rain, Climate Policy Director with Prairie Rivers Network. The number to join our conversation, 800-222-9455. We've got a call on the line from Whiteside County, Oliver in Linden. What's your question?
Hello there. I was wondering if Randy could discuss the any further sequestration carbon sequestration efforts across Illinois. I understand the efforts around protecting the aquifers, but if any other ones were going on, I would be interested in hearing about those.
Thanks for your call, Oliver. Randy, can you respond to that?
Sure. There are a range of applications that are before the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. I don't recall the exact count of projects, but it's around half a dozen projects, around 20 to 25 wells being considered for use as injection wells to increase the amount of CO2 that would be permanently stored. And that kind of increase in sequestration is needed to meaningfully make differences in emissions. We do have some corollaries that have occurred within Illinois. If you heat your home with natural gas, Illinois is one of those areas that has the largest amount of natural gas storage in the nation. We have nearly 1 trillion cubic feet of natural gas storage that helps us heat our homes. That is utilizing the subsurface geology to store natural gas so we can call on it when we need it in the cold months for heating our homes. The carbon storage proposals and plans would utilize the same type of geology, although the infrastructure is required to be more stringently designed and monitored through the existing regulatory process.
Andrew, I'd like to hear your thoughts on the bill that's now awaiting, you know, action from Governor Pritzker. And just, you know, by the way, that's been moved onto his desk June 18th. He has 60 calendar days to act on it before it becomes before it automatically becomes a law, unless vetoed. We reached out to Pritzker's office for an update on the decision, and his press secretary didn't say one way or another whether he'll sign it, but said, quote, status remains the same. Andrew, what are your thoughts on the bill, and do you feel like it would sufficiently address your concerns about carbon sequestration and water protections?
Yeah, we're really pleased that the legislation passed. We were supporting it and helping the legislators who are considering this question, supporting their work in passing these critical protections. So we were looking at four sites that were going to be proposed for multiple wells, but four different locations that would be directly impacting the Mahomet Aquifer. And one of those was in the recharge zone, and that was ultimately not covered by the protections in the bill, maybe one of the more painful concessions. But the other three sites will now not move forward because the bill is going to be protecting the main area of the Mahomet Aquifer, which is really a huge victory, I would say. And ultimately, the reason why a legislative action was necessary and appropriate is that you know, it's up to decision makers and legislators to decide what risk they want to take for their communities, their resources, the people they represent. And I think the appropriate response for the Mahomet Aquifer is that the risk tolerance should be zero. And as I noted before, we were looking at these projects proposing to store carbon at 50 times what we've ever done in Illinois at that site in Decatur. And so we're talking about scaling things up in a way that is beyond what we've done before, and that was going to happen under our precious no-risk resource, the Mahomet Aquifer. And that just doesn't feel like it makes sense. And those four sites that we knew about were just what we know about, right? Like, this is something we're expecting that there were going to be more proposals down the line. And so this really felt like a chance to get ahead of what could become a much larger problem and make it clear to industry that the Mahomet is not where they should be looking to invest. And indeed, there are other places and there are other projects moving forward in Illinois that won't be sequestering under the Mahomet Aquifer. So, you know, I think legislative action was really critical here and extremely important and a big win.
We've got another caller on the line, Paul in Urbana. Paul, what's your question?
Well, I want to go back to questioning the whole premise of carbon sequestration. I like the idea from Prairie River's fellow that, you know, the money should be spent on other more immediate things and getting rid of coal plants. But we have just sort of accept the status quo of the situation. But since we have a geologist here, what about earthquakes? We're not earthquake prone here, but there's history in the record of massive earthquakes turning the Mississippi River around. It obviously would do great damage to many, many things, but among other things, it could destabilize this whole strata of carboniferous, whatever, material, letting water in. And, you know, it would be delaying the carbon release, but it wouldn't stop it entirely. At least that's what chemistry would imply to me. So what about the whole premise?
Thanks so much for your question, Paul. Randy, you know, it seems like a lot of concerns are kind of like, you know, worst case scenario planning, right? Like, okay, there could be protections in place to make sure things don't happen, but what if? And so can you respond specifically to Paul's question about earthquake concern?
Sure. So in Illinois, most of Illinois, especially the northern two-thirds to three-quarters, we're in a relatively low seismic risk area. We don't have a lot of faults or folds that could be moving. We don't have a lot of seismic activity. And we know through the geologic record that over long, long periods of time, even though these events have been occurring, like the one that was mentioned in the 1800s about along the New Madrid zone, those still have not affected the geology in the deep subsurface. And we know this by looking at the chemistry of the fluids within those layers, because they remain very distinct between one layer and another. So even though we feel them at the surface, they are not affecting anything that deeply in the subsurface. One other thing I will mention is that projects that are developed are monitoring the energy in the subsurface. They're listening to acoustic signals in the subsurface that might indicate any kind of anomalous movement or changes in the characteristics of the rocks. Those are monitoring things on a very low energy scale, things that would not be events or microseismic events that could be felt at the surface. So that's actually part of the monitoring plan on these projects, is to look at those types of signals to make sure that no alterations to those zones is occurring because of the project.
We've just got a couple minutes before we're going to wrap. So I wonder if I could just ask each of you to share just final thoughts on the issue, given what has been brought up. Andrew, can you go first?
Sure thing. I think this was another great example of the region stepping up to protect the Mahomet Aquifer, demonstrating that this is really a resource that we want to make sure is available for now and forever, or as long as we can keep the aquifer safe. The amount of awareness really is striking of people who support the aquifer itself, know how important of a resource it is. I live in Champaign-Urbana. I drink this water, and our community would not exist if it weren't for this unique and precious resource. So that sole source designation and the work that went into that is so critical. It is a US EPA designation, but I think the most valuable part of it is really that it is a official declaration of why this resource is so important. And so when we consider technology like carbon sequestration or other forms of injection, we just need to really take a hard look at it and ask, is this technology really proven and tested and ready to be done through, under, and interacting with our precious water resource? And I think the decision makers here made the right choice, which is like, let's not take that risk. That's not something that we feel like is safe and proven yet. We'll see what time tells. Maybe this, as the technology around carbon capture sequestration gets more mature, as we understand it better, as we make sure we use the right materials, like the Decatur leak was caused by the best material we knew not working.
I want to make sure we have time for Randy here. Yeah, we just have about 30 seconds left. If Randy, if you could share final thoughts as well.
Sure. First of all, I really appreciate the conversation. You're facilitating it. Our technical assessments over the last 20 plus years point to CCS as being a safe process when properly permitted and operated. We have great geology. It's good that everybody's engaged in the conversation. I encourage all listeners to engage in other opportunities to learn about projects, may even visit CCS Learning Days. Currently, there's one happening at Richland Community College in Decatur. There will be more. And if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to us at the Prairie Research Institute.
We'll have to leave it there. Randy Locke, thank you for joining us. Chief Scientist with Illinois State Geological Survey, and Andrew Rain with Prairie Rivers Network. Thanks so much to both of you. We're coming up on a break. This is the 21st. Stay with us.